Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Terry Bradshaw is putting up $1 million for grabs again in this week's free-to-play Super 6 contest. All you have to do is correctly predict the outcome of 6 NFL games. Make sure you get your picks in before kickoff Sunday for your chance to be a millionaire. And for top stories, scores, and more, go to the Fox Sports app. Colin, Panthers-Saints is one of the matchups this week. Give us your winner and final score.
A lot of Vegas wise guys love the Saints by 10, 30, 20. They're very good late October, November is when the Saints start playing well. Saints off a bye. Carolina's had several really tough games. I like the Saints to win by 10. By the way, the greatest invention, NASA yesterday, may have been the day before, NASA creates a spaceship that landed on a moving asteroid. It was only on there for about 6 seconds and got rocks because they want to know, you know, trying to figure out these asteroids so they don't hit us and blow the earth up. So literally, I thought FaceTime was the greatest invention of my life. I told you FaceTime. My daughter was in South Africa. I was on a beach in California, and I talked to her. She was in a tiny room. I was on the beach, and I talked to my daughter on FaceTime. I thought it was the most amazing thing in the world. I just couldn't figure it out. And literally, instantaneously, no delay. That has been surpassed by NASA creating a spaceship that can land on a moving asteroid.
Well, I mean, that's good news. So if Armageddon happens, we can send Buscemi and Bruce Willis up there and get it done.
Yeah, Bruce Willis was on it. The sources tell me that was a movie, but we have some verification that was just fiction.
I love that movie, and I cry every time, even though I know it's going to happen. Every time.
Antonio Cromartie is not fiction. 11 years in the NFL, joining us live, the four-time Pro Bowler. So people think I don't like Aaron Rodgers, but I do say that he has been blown out 10% of his career starts, and Russell Wilson less than half that. Is that Russell tends to be kind of a neutral personality, no highs, no lows. Aaron tends to be, you know, discount, double check. He's doing celebrations, or he gets moody and his body language is lousy. And I watched him this weekend, and I said after the second pick, it's not that he shut down, but he wouldn't throw the ball downfield. He wouldn't take big risks. Now, he could probably argue it was windy. They'd figured me out. But is it a fair criticism that Aaron tends to be a little hot and cold, and sometimes his body language is a turnoff for me? It's like he kind of bails on games and plays.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say he bails. I just think his body language it tells you how he's really feeling. You know, he almost threw two pick sixes in that game. So, you know, you get something like that and you really don't do that throughout your whole entire career. It's something like, man, what is going on? You know, he threw a bad out, a pass that he threw very late on that usually I don't see him make that kind of throw. And another one was, you know, the defenders made a great play on the second one. But throughout that game, you can tell that his body language wasn't there. Like you said, he wasn't getting the ball down the field. He just was not into that game after those two interceptions.
So the Cowboys, multiple players leaking to a reporter, Jane Slater, these coaches don't know what they're doing. They don't adapt. They're bad at their jobs. Have you, in your 11 years in the NFL, were you ever on a team, Antonio, where there were leaks to the press banging on the coaching staff?
No, not banging on the coaching staff. It was more so stuff that was getting leaked that were coaches was banging on the players through the media, but they wouldn't say who they were. But it's just a point of like, you know, you dealing with that as a leader in the locker room, whatever's being leaked out, it's not being leaked out by the guys that don't play. It's by the leaders, be honest with you. And that's something that, you know, the coach needs to get a control of the locker room. Yes, professional players, they always say this is your locker room, but at the end of the day, Your team goes as far as your coach is going to really take you. And these guys need to understand, like, yeah, it's a new coach. It's a new year. Everything is being done differently because all the situation that's dealing with COVID. Guys got a helmet and a belt away. It's not, you know, Jason Garrett giving you what you want or doing what you have to do. It's Mike McCarthy. So he has to go out and go do what he has to do. No matter who's his coaching staff, it's you guys out there every single day that's putting the film out on the football field. So if you guys go out and perform the way you need to, you don't have to worry about the coaching staff. Can't blame your losses on the coaching staff because they're not playing. All that they can do is prepare you to get ready to play. And you guys got to prepare also by watching film and doing what you're supposed to do. So it's a 50-50 thing in this. And players need to just sit back and just, you know, don't go to the media about it. Go to the head man about it. I'm pretty sure he has, Jerry Jones has his door open for you can come and go talk to him.
Did you ever have a coach, though, Antonio, that you thought didn't know what he was doing? Did you ever have what you thought to be was a really bad coach in your career?
Yeah, I'll tell you. what's the – I forgot his name. He's over in Green Bay now, the defensive coordinator. I can't even think of his name right now.
Mike Pettine?
That's over there at Green Bay. But I felt the same way about him. I think Rex had given him the job at that point in time, but – I just felt like at that point in time that he couldn't tell me anything that I couldn't get from anybody.
Yeah. So Antonio Brown's talented, but I've saw him kind of blow up in Pittsburgh, Oakland, New England. It didn't work. Seattle's really good. They've already got a number one receiver in DK Metcalf. Is Antonio Brown worth the risk?
He's worth the risk. I think the biggest thing now is just how is he mentally? The athlete Antonio Brown is great. You know, the football player is great, but it's just the off the field antics, the mental part of the game. I mean, say the mental part of it. Is he mentally ready to actually come back into an organization and actually do what they need him to do? And I think that's where you have to look at it. I think we just have to get into a standpoint of understanding, is he there mentally to come back into an organization and be a part of an organization? Because like I said, it's been three organizations where he's blown up after the whole entire thing, you know, and you don't want that. I think the Seahawks are heading in the right direction and have a number one receiver in DJ Metcalf, and you just got to go from there.
Yeah. If you were on a team like Seattle, which is clearly good enough to play for the Super Bowl, And you were on the team, you're one of their 5-6 stars, and they bring in Antonio Brown, and he starts to go sideways a little bit. Would you be comfortable confronting him as a veteran player? Because like Seattle's got veteran leadership, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner. If a guy starts to go sideways, did you always feel like, hey, I'd feel comfortable going and talking to him man-to-man, player-to-player?
Oh, 100%. But I think that starts with the leaders that's in the locker room. I think when you get the core guys and Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, and those guys have that kind of position with him before anything goes sideways and what the expectations of him on the field and off the field needs to be, then you already set those standards. And when those expectations aren't being met on the field or off the field, then we have to have another conversation. But I think that needs to be handled by the leaders in the locker room, by having a sit-down meeting, if they do sign Antonio Brown to the Seahawks, to have a sit-down meeting and understand what we're trying to do and what we're looking for from you.
Le'Veon Bell to the Chiefs. I was telling Joy, I said, sometimes sports is amazing. He goes from the worst team in the league to potentially the best team in the league. I saw this with Calais Campbell, went Jaguars to Ravens, and I thought, what a gift to be at the end of your career to go to the best offensive coach in football, maybe the best quarterback. I kind of think this is just going to kind of – it's unwrapping a present. It's like Le'Veon's going to be inspired. He's going to play well. But you tell me, when you get traded to a team, can a new environment change everything for a player?
Well, a new environment can change everything, especially if you're winning. If you got a winning environment, you got people that actually want you in the building, then, you know, those circumstances change. You know, you're looking at it in a totally different way, and you want to go make sure you go out and do everything the right way and do the things that you're supposed to do. He didn't have that when he was with the Jets. You had a coach that didn't want him in the first place, didn't use him well, didn't have no idea how to use him. And now you're going with a coach, one of the best offensive-minded coaches, to go out and go use him well. But not only that, he's not going to be taking a lot on his body still. He's going to be the reliever for the rookie. So you're talking about taking some carries away for the rookie running back to be able to go out and play in those months of November, December, heading into the playoffs.
Antonio Cromartie, good seeing you, bud. Thanks, man.
Good seeing you, too. Thank you.
Good stuff. I know all you have said, great interview, Colin. We just got off the NASA website. It's pretty cool. We have landed a spaceship, not a spaceship. We have landed a lunar module. I'm just making that up. On an asteroid that was going a zillion miles an hour. Does everybody else understand how amazing that is?
It is amazing.
We landed on an asteroid for 6 seconds because it was going so fast. NASA.
Like it's important.
My son wants to work for NASA.
I used to want to work for NASA. That's good that he wants to do that.
Yeah, he's into that stuff. But it's incredible. So I'm on all these little science sites I wouldn't normally go on.
I wanted to be Mae Jameson.
Really?
Yeah, but then I realized I am not a scientist. And that is a requirement for being an astronaut.
Oh. Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I thought you could just major in PE like the rest of us.
No.
By the way, RecTech more than a grill, it's a lifestyle. RecTech with a Q.com, RECTEQ.com. Here is Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Whenever Elon Musk gets that up and running.
Yeah, SpaceX.
Are you gonna take a trip?
No, but I know a sales guy over there. I don't know Elon Musk, and it's not far from my house, although I think they're moving. Don't they want to move to Texas or something because it's too expensive here?
I haven't been keeping up because I don't have my dollars in line to pay for a ticket yet, but I would go to space.
Oh, God, no.
No?
No, I bungee jump once. That's enough.
I'm not bungee jumping, and I'm not jumping out of a perfectly good airplane, but I would go to space.
Wow, you would go to space.
I mean, they're just taking up for a second.
I don't know. I don't know about that, Joy.
I think it'd be kind of cool.
I don't know.
I feel like I've taken bigger risks.
I've gone to the Space Needle a half dozen times. That is enough. That's as high as I need to go. I did a hot air balloon one time. Not doing.
Are you afraid of heights?
I'm not afraid of heights. I'm uncomfortable being in a hot air balloon at 900
yeah,
feet.
Yeah, I'm not doing a hot air balloon either.
Well, that's all I know is space is 10 times higher than a plane and a hot air balloon.
It's pretty high up there, yes. So the Cowboys needed Zeke to step up in the absence of Dak Prescott this week. That did not really happen. He rushed for 49 yards on 12 carries, fumbled twice in the 38-10 blowout loss to the Cardinals. Zeke says he's focusing on correcting his fumbling problem, but there's not really a singular answer for it.
I just got to lock in and focus. I don't think there's a specific answer. All I can do is give myself more, just watch as much film as I can, gather as much information as I can, and try to use that to help me. But I don't think there's an exact answer on how to fix, you know, these fumbling problems I've had this year.
In six games, he's fumbled 5 times, lost 4. He lost 2 of his 3 fumbles in the 2019 season.
Some guys, Adrian Peterson has always fumbled, never corrected it. Tiki Barber had a fumbling problem, corrected it. So it is correctable, but some guys just fumble more.
I agree with him, though. I don't think it's one single thing. Like, it can be your hands need to get stronger. Maybe you need to focus more. Maybe you're carrying the ball in a specific way that's more vulnerable. Like, there are things you can tweak.
Well, here's why we know you can teach it. Because Patriot running backs never fumble. The New England Patriot running backs have the fewest fumbles in the last 20 years. So clearly you can teach. It's not like they just draft guys who don't fumble. Zeke didn't used to fumble much.
Right.
And now he fumbles. So it's probably sloppy. It's a coaching thing. Just like quarterbacks sometimes, the mechanics. Matt Stafford is, you know, his mechanics. You got to stay on Matt Stafford. Cam, sometimes you got to stay on certain guys with their mechanics. Brady's are great. Russell Wilson's are great. They both work on it. They're just fastidious. But same with the running backs, I would imagine. Some guys get bad mechanics. They get sloppy and the fumbles go off.
And on top of all of the other things that the Cowboys have to worry about this year, they probably would like Zeke to get this together. They need him to get going.
They're in a pick'em game this weekend against Washington. Which way do you go on that?
I'm going to stick with the Cowboys just a little bit longer.
So look at the Goulet is the cynic. So Goulet, you take Washington?
Yeah. They have a good pass rush. The Cowboys O-line, as bad as it is, actually got worse. Their left tackle got hurt. So Andy Dalton under pressure. Good luck with that.
All right.
I'm gonna stick one more week.
Okay.
I'm gonna be strong for one more week.
You know, but the funny thing was, not only did Dallas lose to Arizona, Joy, Arizona didn't play great.
Yeah.
It was not a great Arizona performance, and they rolled them in Dallas. So that's what's scary is that they're getting blown out by teams not playing particularly well.
That's why tonight's game with the Giants and Eagles is so important. Like, this division is wide open. Now, obviously, nobody thinks that whoever gets out of this division is going to make any noise in the playoffs, but it still is something to build on.
If Joe Judge wins the division his first year, no OTAs, Saquon Barkley out, that is a great first year as a head coach in New York.
Absolutely.
Great.
So the Steelers are rolling this season, starting 5-0 for the first time since 1978 with the return of Big Ben. Juju Smith-Schuster's numbers were expected to rise. Instead, he's second on the team to rookie Chase Claypool with only 194 receiving yards so far, but he is not worried about his stats as long as the team is winning.
He was talking about, you only got me 2 points this week for fantasy. I was like, well, I mean, I'd rather have 2 points and be 5-0 than to be 1-4 and to be have 25 fantasy points. So I'm having fun all the time, whether I get the bar or not, whether I get 2 catches for 10 yards, whether I get 6 catches for 60 yards. For me, it's more so about, you know, the team, the atmosphere.
Juju is a great team guy, and obviously this is the right thing to say, but he's right. Winning is more important than fantasy points. By the way, I'm going to just say this. I'm in 3 fantasy leagues this year. Please stop telling athletes about how they did in your fantasy team. It is so nerdy. Stop. Please stop.
Nothing is nerdier.
It's nothing. I can't think of a single thing worse. No one cares about your fantasy team. You are the only person on earth that cares about your fantasy team. You and the person that beat you this week. That's it.
So you're in 3 teams.
3 leagues, yeah. It's exhausting, which is why I'm not doing well in any of them.
Yeah, I've never played fantasy football in my life. I bet every weekend.
I like fantasy football, but I can't imagine saying to anyone, like, I can't imagine seeing Juju like, you only got me 2 points in my fantasy league. Ugh. Stop. It's insane to me. Anyway, the receivers are always awesome. Chase Claypool's having an incredible season, and I'm really looking forward to this Steelers-Titans game.
Oh, it's the game of the weekend. Yeah.
It's going to be incredible. So the Bengals haven't had quite the start that Joe Burrow wanted, but his personal stats have been very strong. He's already had 4 games with at least 300 passing yards, which ties him for the 4th most for a rookie in NFL history. The rookie record is 6 300-yard passing games set by Andrew Luck in 2012. He only needs 3 more 300-yard games over his last 10 to break the record. I wanted to take a look at his rookie season against Baker Mayfield's rookie season through the first 6 starts, just to kind of see where their stats are. And they're pretty similar. He has more passing yards per game. His completion percentage is significantly higher, and he's also taken 3 more sacks so far through this season. Burrow's 24 sacks are the 2nd most in the NFL. And Baker Mayfield's 21 sacks through the first 6 games of his rookie season were the 2nd most in the NFL during that span. So they're pretty much the same in every category except for passing yards per game and completion percentage. Now, obviously, the reason that we talk about Baker the way that he is talked about is because he did have a good rookie season. He was up against Saquon Barkley for rookie of the year. Saquon obviously won it, but they're kind of trying to get him back into that mode that he was in rookie season.
I feel totally different about their rookie seasons.
Yeah.
Because Burrow totally physically looks the part.
That's why I wanted to look at their stats, because it is interesting that the way you have so much more optimism about how Burrow is going to develop.
Well, and also the division's so much better now. Yeah. Pittsburgh's great. Baltimore's a Super Bowl team. Cleveland's got tons of talent. So that's what Burrow is going up against. The AFC is, frankly, the AFC's just better. Whereas Baker came in and the Steelers were kind of down in a mess. Baltimore didn't have Lamar yet doing anything. Not quite his rookie year.
So Burrow's actually putting up the similar numbers to Baker and better in some categories up against a
much
more
better,
difficult division.
Yeah, and he's also, I would also say, is that if you look at Burrow's faced who? The Colts are an excellent defense. He's faced the Ravens. Who else has he faced?
He's played the Browns. Right?
He's played the Browns,
yeah.
Who are a real football team now.
So the Eagles, Jacksonville, Ravens, Colts. No, he's playing the Browns, I'm sorry, this weekend.
Yeah. I don't know. It feels different. Burrow looks more legitimate.
No, they play the Browns. Chargers, Browns, Eagles, Jags, Ravens, Colts.
Yes, and I think if you look at those pass rushes, take out the Jags, Burrow's faced really good pass rushes, and he's looked the part. Philadelphia's got a real defense. Colts have a real defense. Chargers were healthy back then, have a real defense.
And Baker's numbers have gone down year to year with arguably better weapons.
And better coaching.
Yeah.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
John Smoltz, Hall of Famer, live from the World Series. Dodgers Rays going to be joining us next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Tomorrow night on Fox, it's Game 3 of the World Series. Catch Mookie Betts and the Dodgers as they take on rookie sensation Randy Arozarena and the Rays. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Last night was one of those games, if you're a baseball fan, if you're a Dodger fan, right? Like, and it's nothing against the Rays, but I covered Tampa, so there's a true story. So I used to work in Tampa. And when I worked in Tampa, they were trying to get a Major League Baseball franchise. They didn't have it. And so Tampa, they didn't really have the finances or facility. There's only one Fortune 500 company when I was there, Raymond James. It's like a financial service. So there wasn't a lot of money. Steinbrenner was there. And so George Steinbrenner, the late George Steinbrenner, lived in Tampa. And so Tampa didn't have the best pitch. But Steinbrenner had so much pull within baseball, he said, I want a team close because the Yankees' spring training site is Tampa. So he goes, I want a team here so the Yankees come down here and play and I can go watch them play. And that was the basis. The belief was Washington had a much better pitch. Tampa didn't really have the corporate support, but Steinbrenner had enormous pull. So they got a team, but they don't play in Tampa. They play in St. Petersburg, which people in Tampa don't want to drive across the bridge at night. So the attendance has always been incredibly spotty. It's not the best stadium, but it's interesting because it's not, Tampa's done a remarkable job. They have really no revenues, very low revenues, and they get a lot of draft picks. And somebody in that scouting department knows what they're doing because when you consider the salary, and in baseball there's no salary cap, so it's really problematic if you don't. If you don't have a lot of money, it's problematic, right? Because the Yankees can just, Dodgers, Yankees, Red Sox, there's some real big revenue teams. But Rangers have big money, you know, and then there's the Cubs have money. And I think Atlanta and, you know, Atlanta's got some real money. The Cardinals have some money. So it's, I'm always amazed by Tampa. There's nobody else like them in sports. To be in a sport with no salary cap, and you're in a division with the Yankees and the Red Sox, and Canada's number one team, the fact that, forget the World Series, that they're viable. They gave the Yankees fits this year. Yankees, as Goulet will tell you, Yankees struggled all year with Tampa. There's nothing, the Yankees were 2-8 against Tampa. And Tampa's got great pitching and, you know, a lot of hard throwers. But it's fascinating. They really shouldn't be as good as they are. They really shouldn't. Tampa in a sport with no salary cap should not be this good. And they should not be in the World Series, but they are. John Smoltz, 22 years, 8-time All-Star, Hall of Famer, is now joining us live. World Series Fox Sports baseball analyst. I was just saying, I'm amazed Tampa's in the World Series. I'm amazed. They're in with the big money Red Sox, the big revenue Yankees. Somebody in that organization can scout, John, because, I mean, their talent, their pitching talent, how do you explain their success in a sport with no salary cap?
Well, the biggest thing is they've been able to identify what somebody else may not like, and they use it to their advantage. They create arm angles. They've got velocity. They have similar players as far as they're seeking the power and the home run. They're kind of counteracting what analytics is out there doing. So, in other words, everybody is trying to hit fastballs. Well, fastballs are one of the lowest thrown pitch in baseball today. So they've got guys that can hit spin and off speed. And then, of course, they've got guys in the bullpen that have power and can spin a baseball. So they've utilized everybody's talent. They use more pieces. They have young, dynamic arms. And I got to give them credit because it's not just a one-year, two-year window. They've been doing this for a while.
Yep.
And they've maximized their trades, which you can say you got to get a little lucky. But I think to your point, it's the scouting. And I've said this all along now, if you're a team that the Rays call you and ask you for a particular player, just hang up. That's how good they've been.
By the way, Mookie Betts, he reminds me of a 1970s baseball player. Get on, steal a couple bases. Did you ever play with anybody that – he does remind me of an old school guy. Your thoughts about Mookie?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it reminds me back in the day where basically leadoff hitters did exactly that. You know, we had to face so many typical leadoff guys that when they got on, they were going to get to second, third. I played with Otis Nixon and Deion Sanders at the top of the lineup. That was fun for a while. seeing their speed on the bases. You had to worry about a lot more things when you were pitching in that era. Today, it just doesn't happen. And so when it happens, we look at it and go, oh my gosh, what a weapon. And he is that weapon. He's the five-tool player. He's the guy that Mike Trout, you know, basically is, but they've cut Mike Trout's ability to steal. And, you know, I know that the game's played differently from valuing 90 feet and not making outs on the bases. But when you see a guy like Mookie Betts, you see a difference maker.
You concerned about the Dodgers bullpen?
You know, I'm only concerned about the Dodgers bullpen when they have to do many games like yesterday. I think the bullpen has a lot of options and has a lot of leverage. But let's just face the facts that the Dodgers, reason they're the best team in baseball is because they had the best starting pitching in baseball. And that was using five guys in a rotation throughout the year. But then when you go to 2.5 starters in the postseason, you start kind of convoluting some of the roles and you maybe bring in some factors you don't have to. And yesterday didn't go the way Dave Roberts wanted it to, of course. You had two starters pitch in the game, so now you're down to three starters. And with the day off, I think you could do some of those things. I'm not overly concerned with their bullpen, but I'll tell you what, the Dodgers have to play the shortest game of series. They're going to have the lead by the sixth inning. That's what the Rays make you do. And if you don't have the lead, there's a great chance you're going to lose.
Celebrations, I grew up with them. I grew up with Al Raboski. I grew up with Reggie Jackson. I grew up with Charlie Hustle. I grew up with them. Baseball then said, we don't like them. It's back. The staring, I love it. I'm a consumer. I think sports should be fun. You're an old school guy. Does it all sit well with you?
Well, I just wish that more pitchers would do it. Why can it be one sided? Why do the hitters have all the fun? You know, why can they hit a home run and 10-1 lead and act as if they won the World Series? You know, I think some pitchers need to start showing some excitement and tell guys to sit down when they strike out. If that's the case, I think you're going to see great entertainment. I've never understood why it's been one sided. And, you know, the fact is that when you lose context of a celebration, it has a chance to get ugly. And that's the only time I think the sport has, you know, certain things they have to worry about. But I'm all for it. I get it. This was a perfect year. Not a lot of fans. You know, the situation between the Dodgers and the Padres, and the pitcher finally did something and everyone blew a gasket when Gratterall did something, you know, we've never seen before. Throw his glove, shoot a kiss the other way. I'm all for, if you're going to do it one way as a hitter, you better be prepared for a pitcher sooner or later to sit on the mound after he strikes you out.
We're short on time. John Smoltz is not short on wisdom. He is fantastic, as good as anybody that does it, and a humble guy. Fox Sports baseball analyst, 22 years a Hall of Famer. John, we got to run. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's funny he mentions that. So I grew up with a guy named Al Raboski of the Cardinals, and he was a fist pumper. And it was just one of those things where you can't tell me you don't think it's cool that when Mookie Betts, like when a player slides into home and they just beat the throw, how can you ask an athlete in a tight game late? It's almost like when I had my daughter, a child, I lost myself. Like for 3 minutes, I couldn't control my emotions. I had tears running down my face. Now you know you're saying, well, that's a child. When you're a 25-year-old, you slide across home plate in the World Series of Game 4, the leading run in the eighth inning, you're outside of yourself.
Well, they always argue, like, it's just for the kids. You got to teach them how to play the game. It's a certain way to play the game.
They're your kids. Deal with it. God, I don't care about your kids. Like, just parent. I don't know. I just think you train all these years. You get a right to
it's
pump
a It's your life's work.
That's right. Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades. Walmart. Last two times longer. Check them out. Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades. See you tomorrow.